Hey, it's Kitty, and I am doing something probably dumb, and I'm gonna read while I'm cooking lunch. Like, even just saying it, I'm like, no, it's a stupid idea. We are in Shay Kitty Kitchen making elegant food, which is called grilled cheese and tomato soup, bitches. Okay. So, where do we leave off? Oh, so do you want to know what happened? Why I haven't done another chapter of this book, Sex for One, for a while? It's because I've posted 3 chapters. Chapter 4, Sex Art. I started reading it and was playing with a kitty toy, like I do when I do these chapter readings. And I couldn't finish it because I had to finish something else. So there's a chapter where it's part one me reading, and then I accidentally turned the recording off, and then I made a new recording, like I pressed record again right away, and then that one's really just naughty. So I can post it if I figure out how to edit those two recordings together into one. Because I feel like part one, part two is kind of annoying. I'm so rambly. Guys, I wish someone was here to be like, can I focus? Okay, I'm going to flip over the grilled cheese. It's only the very slightest tail at this point. And I'm going to stir this tomato soup. And this is like the... I'm American, so I don't know where you are, but for me, this is like childhood ingredients. We are going with Campbell's tomato soup from a can, and you pour in the squishy can, and then you fill the can back up with half milk, half water, and then you pour that in, and then you put in a little bit of probably salt and pepper, or at least just pepper. Then we have Italian bread, which is mostly like white bread. This one. I don't know what makes it called Italian. Ooh. And Kraft American cheese. One day in college, I'm telling a story, and then I'm going to read you some stuff. One day in college, freshman year, and we're in our dorms, and we're getting ready to go out, and this girl, the police come, not to my dorm, but like down the hall, and everyone pokes their head out, because it's one of the early weekends. This is 10 years ago now, but I still remember it. And, like, I hope I'm not outing this poor girl by telling this story. If you can piece together her identity, my hope is that, you know, she was lying. So it's her own fault either which way, because I remember it as it happened. The police are knocking on the door down the dorm room. We're all in, like... various states of getting ready. We've been sneaking shots in our dorm room. Everyone's a little drunk. Everyone's getting dressed, half dressed, borrowing each other's outfits, doing hair, makeup, taking shots, being silly. And we hear this girl start screaming and crying, and we hear our RA's voice, and she's like, no. And we said this for the rest of college. No, you can't arrest me. My dad owns Kraft. Dad owns Kraft. And she's like getting hauled away by the police. And so now when I make Kraft mac and cheese or Kraft singles American cheese on my grilled cheese, I always think of that lovely lady from my fine upstanding education. This is maybe good. Maybe this can be a study of ADHD, because I just started straightening my hair, and then I remembered that there's food in the kitchen, on the stove. Oy. So, I'm going to come back to chapter 4, Sex Art, and skip to chapter 5, Raising Sexual Consciousness, which is an interesting one. Page 41. Here we go. I'm not using a kitty toy because I'm cooking.
And that's too many things to handle.
Okay. By making no secret of my sex life and laughing away myths about masturbation, I began to feel more self-confident.
Ah! Oh my goodness! The soup!
Don't worry about it. Everything's fine.
I think the soup's ready. Intermission. Seth, we just started. Start a mission.
Let me wipe this off and then
we're almost good, I think, to go. I think that's done. Oof. Oh, ow. Okay. So any of you listening who either are into DDLG or know that I have a little bit of a DDLG kink, Daddy Dom, and me getting to act kind of like a silly bratty little girl sometimes. One of the reasons I think I'm actually kind of a great little for someone to have, if ever someone did have me, which they won't, free bird, free kitty, but if they did, it's because I'm my ADHD plus my uncoordination, which is from something called dysgraphia. I'm literally like a dumb, I'm very smart, but I'm like a dumb, ditzy, grown-up toddler. So the whole thing of like, oh, you're too little to make your lunch? Like, actually, sometimes, yeah. I'll burn it and break stuff.
Anyway, by making no secret of my sex life and laughing away myths about masturbation, I began to feel more self-confident. Sexual honesty was very healing, and I was committed to telling my women friends that I'd been learning through my own efforts to change. Going public about sex brought letters, phone calls, and questions from women of varied backgrounds, all wanting to know more about self-love and orgasm. Sharing sex information was another step in raising my sexual consciousness. Women communicating with women about sex was reversing the repression conditioned so deeply into the female psyche. Finally, I understood perfectly well that, and this is in italics, the personal was political. In my little note, I want to add this piece where she says, finally, she's reversing the repression conditioned so deeply into the female psyche. My experience on Reddit is so cool and interesting because I do believe that it's something really specific that comes along with being raised as a girl to a woman. But that does not mean that men are not super sexually repressed and confused and conflicted as well. And so there is a chapter about men coming up, and I'm excited about that one because a lot of you listening are my boys. Okay. If women could learn to share information about their sex lives, feminism would be a major event in sexual history. Yeah, dude. A classic case of repressed female masturbation was that of my friend Nancy. At age 25, after 6 years of sexual intercourse, she wasn't sure if she'd ever experienced an orgasm. It's hard to imagine a young man with a similar problem. I felt the only way she'd know for sure was to learn how to bring herself to orgasm. Nancy had never consciously masturbated. Think about that. Nancy has been having sex with a man for 6 years. She's an adult woman. She's never even touched herself. She's never masturbated. That is exactly how I was. I lost my virginity age 19. Well, okay, little sexual history. I became sexually... I think it's important to define the difference between sexually aroused and sexually active. Because I never experimented as a child with masturbating or touching myself. I never, put my kitty under the bathtub faucet to get the water poured on it. I never humped a pillow. I literally never even, reached into my own panties. Ever. Never looked at myself naked. When I started posting nudes on Reddit in March, those were the first photos I've ever taken of myself naked. Like,
this is so new for me. And I can always tell the difference when I'm getting comments between someone who's been following along and someone new, because the people that are new have this impression that I am like out and about, confident sex girl, woman. You know, that's my persona, out and about, confident sex girl, woman. But the thing is, that's like new shit. And so I like that this story is included, because I'm not the only one of my friends who like waited that long before figuring out that masturbation was for girls and women too. Okay. Nancy. We're talking about her. Nancy had never consciously masturbated. I described some of the sensations I'd experienced and drew a picture of the female genitals, explaining the importance of the clitoris. After a week, Nancy admitted that she felt silly and self-conscious trying to masturbate. 100%. That's what happens at the beginning when they're like, get kitty. It was another woman a little older than me and my best friend in college when we were juniors. And we admitted we'd never done it. And she literally was like, Kitty's best friend, I'm not going to name her name, like, go to your rooms and touch yourselves and come back here and report back to me and tell me how it was. And we literally were like, okay, do, do, do. No, we were drunk and we're like, we can't do that. Ah. But we did it. And we went back and we were like, whoa, dude. And you know what? Neither one of us were virgins, but neither of us knew our bodies could even feel good, because we were too anxious and too nervous. During sex, we weren't even like trying to make ourselves feel good. We were just trying to do a good job and not be bad at sex and not be bad. Hi. I'm getting a spoon. Time out. Is this really annoying and loud? Probably is. This is probably the worst recording. Sorry. After a week, Nancy admitted that she felt silly and self-conscious trying to masturbate. Furthermore, nothing had happened. When I discovered she'd only spent 10 minutes on her self-loving, I gently pointed out that she devoted hours to her face and hair. It might be worth it to spend at least an hour on her body. Ooh, Betty, that's a good point. Okay. Then I went into more detail, describing several different hand techniques, emphasizing how sensuous everything would feel with massage oil. She could use one or more fingers or the flat of her hand, moving in circles, up and down, or from side to side. She could try rubbing her pubic mound or pressing her outer lips together. She could touch her clitoris directly or on either side, varying the rhythm and the amount of pressure. I also suggested that she read a sexy book or try to have a sexual fantasy. Still nothing, said Nancy several weeks later. She complained that her hand had gotten tired and she was bored with the whole exercise. I recommended a vibrator, but she rejected the idea as, quote, too mechanical. Remember, this is like the 80s now. So vibrators like weren't even a thing yet that people had. Well, they had them, but not regular old good girls from suburban land like me. Boring girls. Okay. I recommended a vibrator, but she rejected the idea as too mechanical. Then I remembered another friend who'd experienced her first orgasm in the bathtub by letting the water run on her genitals. She'd been too inhibited to touch herself, quote, there. And she said the water was like a spiritual lover caressing her. Ooh. I passed this information along to Nancy, and it worked. Orgasm at last. I've never tried that. I feel like I wouldn't do anything, but it did for Nancy. Okay. This time there was no doubt in her mind. She was thrilled that it had finally happened and also furious that it had taken her so long. I reminded her of several women we knew
who didn't have orgasms until they were in their 40s. For the next 6 months, Nancy was going steady with her bathtub until she got over her mechanical reservations and purchased an electric vibrator. Now she could have orgasms in her bedroom. She'd also just started a new love affair and was confused about whether to tell her boyfriend that she'd never climaxed from intercourse. I urged her to get him involved in her sexual unfolding immediately, stressing the importance of not faking orgasm. Mm. My soup is yummy. For anyone who was worried about that or wanting an update. Okay. I urged her to get him involved in her sexual unfolding immediately, stressing the importance of not faking orgasm. Once we fake it, we're trapped in the biggest sexual lie of all, I said. To Nancy's delight, her boyfriend was more than happy to be included. The night she got up enough courage to bring out her vibrator, they had a marvelous, quote, threesome. Within a short time, Nancy could have orgasms during intercourse using her vibrator or when her lover did oral sex. She was in heaven. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I got soup in my book. Mm-hmm. Sorry, book. I should pause and eat my lunch. Be right back. Oh, no, I can't pause. That's what I did the last time. It just stops forever. Dang it. We're in it now. Okay. Sorry. I'm just hungry. Okay. Seeing what communication between women could mean, I was ready to become a card-carrying feminist. I joined NOW, N-O-W, but at the time it seemed too conservative. Next, I went on to a women's center started by a younger, more radical woman. A woman at the desk said the center had no CR groups, consciousness-raising, available, and suggested I start one of my own. My immediate response was, but I have no experience. According to her, my experience of being a woman more than qualified me. I wanted some kind of guidelines, a manual, anything, but all I got was a smile and confident advice. Just get the women together and let it happen. Still hung up about who was going to lead the group, I asked two friends to help me. We set up a night and called women we thought would be interested. Between 9 and 15 of us met once a week for over a year. Experimenting with different formats and topics, we shared our information, strength, and hope with one another. It created a powerful new learning environment. Being in an all-women group on a regular basis connected me to lost childhood memories. In my youth, I'd always been close to girlfriends whom I loved, but I'd been systematically diverted from loving girls as I grew older and socially rewarded when I loved boys. As a grown woman, I knew there was always a potential sexual implication when women were together on a regular basis, and the word lesbian terrified me. I had enough problems without being a sexual deviant. Looking back, I could see how sexually timid I'd been, but thanks to my erotic evolution, I became bolder and more experimental. In the late 60s, oh, we're still in the 60s. Oh, no, wait, this is a flashback. In the late 60s, when sex parties were flourishing, I discovered the joys of having playful sex with women. This new erotic dimension felt natural to me, and I started calling myself bisexual. I loved the freedom of allowing myself to feel attracted to both sexes. Then, along came the infighting between the heterosexual and lesbian feminists in the early 70s. Identifying myself as a bisexual feminist meant I couldn't make up my mind. But I didn't want to be a pure lesbian and repress my erotic feelings towards men any more than I wanted to be a pure heterosexual and repress my erotic feelings towards women. I felt like a little androgynous elf scampering between two opposing camps, extolling the pleasures of self-love and masturbation. When I started having my first ongoing sexual relationship with a woman, I was again confronted with the either-or situation. According to society, women could either be romantic lesbian lovers or platonic heterosexual friends. By combining the best of both possibilities, Laura and I became sexual friends. It was a new erotic category for bisexual women. Laura was one of the bravest young women I'd ever met. A corporate banker by day and a radical feminist by night, she was a skilled martial artist who walked the streets without fear. She was also a classic beauty with piercing hazel eyes. She had just turned 30 and I was 42, so I often felt like a big sister who is more experienced, especially in sexual matters. I want one. Okay. During our many discussions about feminism, I explained my sexual politics to Laura. I thought compulsive monogamy, idealized romantic love, and dependent sex were the combined curse of womankind. I'm gonna read that one again because I highlighted it and I like it. I thought that compulsive monogamy, idealized romantic love, and dependent sex were the combined curse of womankind. That's a good thing to say. I like those ideas, and I'm gonna eat some soup. Still hot. To avoid these things, I felt it was important for both of us to spend time apart. She agreed, and all the time we were together, we continued to have other sexual and platonic friends. Gradually, we evolved a sexual sharing that pleased both of us. Laura's Catholic upbringing made sex a misery. Only recently had she learned to have an orgasm from masturbation. At first, when we tried oral sex, it made us both feel anxious. Laura felt pressure to perform when I did it to her, and I worried about taking too long when she did it to me. We let go of trying to give each other an orgasm and shared masturbation instead. Massage and masturbation gave us a surprising amount of sexual variety. Some nights we did massage only and experienced the joy of no sex. Other times we took turns heightening each other's orgasms by combining massage with masturbation. One of us would use a vibrator while the other one would do sensuous touching and vaginal or anal penetration. There were other times when we would use the same vibrator simultaneously. The one on the bottom held the vibrator in a position that was good for her, while the one on top had to move around to get what she wanted. We always took turns leading or following. Sharing masturbation was very healing, and we ended up exchanging hundreds of hours of massage. Instead of being stuck with a romantic image of sex, Laura and I were sharing an erotic image of love. When we finally parted, our love didn't turn into hate, and our meaningful friendship goes on to this day. That's awesome. I'm having another bite of my sandwich. I have friends like that right now for the first time. I have my two neighbors that I've been posting about, and they know that I'm not lovey or falling in love with them, and I don't want monogamy or anything. Just playing. But also real friends. And I have daddy in Ireland. Okay. During the time Laura and I were evolving our sexual friendship, I joined a new CR group composed of professional women who wanted to set up a strong support system, a quote, old girls network for women interested in money and power. I, of course, advocated power that was based on pleasure. Economic power wasn't enough. Without sexual liberation, which freed the human spirit, we would misuse power in the same way as men had. A ruling matriarchy was no different than a patriarchy. They were two sides of the same coin that represented the family. Both mother and father were dictators, benevolent or cruel. In my family, daddy was a pushover, but mother was a force to be reckoned with. One night during a meeting in my new CR group, I talked at length about my sex life, hoping to start a sexual dialogue. I shared what I'd observed during the time I'd gone to sex parties. Many women were faking orgasms. The men were coming, and the women were pleasing their partners. I felt that a woman couldn't really love herself if her sex life was based on pretending. I went on to say that I also enjoyed having sex with both men and women. Although I considered myself to be a bisexual feminist, I thought it was important to embrace all the labels to diffuse their impact. People were socially tortured by having to choose between straight or gay. Until sex labels became obsolete, I was going to call myself a heterosexual, bisexual, lesbian. When I finished my rap, the room was silent. I'm a heterosexual, bisexual, lesbian. I like her. The room was silent. I was shocked to discover that the personal wasn't political, not when it came to sex. Everyone felt that sex was a private matter, while I thought it was a top priority feminist issue. I highlighted that one as well, because I've experienced that so many times on Reddit, where I will, like, chime in on a relationship post or a adults being free and having freedom post and be like, yeah, everyone, what about sex? And everyone's like, shut the fuck up, you dirty whore. And I'm like, no, they didn't really say that. Sometimes, I don't know. And I'm like, but why? And they're like, because no one wants to hear about your cunt while they're working at their desk. And I'm like, okay, that's not what I'm, whatever. Fuck you guys. Okay. Among the women in the group, there were several writers and editors, a photographer, a television producer, a film writer, a theater director, an actress, and two corporate vice presidents. That's like a cool artsy group. Why are they so boring and prude? Only two were married. The rest of us were divorced or single. Automatically, I'd assumed career woman would be more open-minded sexually, more independent. It was not true. Job insecurities and financial problems still made finding the right man the emotional bedrock of security. There was nothing wrong with wanting to share love, sex, and money with a partner, but I felt self-love had to come first. Patience was my middle name as I sat and listened to painful, repetitive stories of love addiction. Being properly brought up and well-educated, these beautiful women were trapped in false modesty and very uptight about their bodies. They all had drippy romantic attitudes about sex, and it was causing them a lot of unhappiness and conflict. I suspected that most of them were hooked on trying to get all their orgasms from intercourse. Everyone in the group was exclusively heterosexual. Whenever I talked about my bisexuality, which I called the natural condition, they all tensed up with their own fears of lesbianism. But I continued to discuss my sex life while they laughed nervously and humored me. They all agreed I was from another planet, while I kept assuring them I was from Kansas. Nonetheless, I loved these intelligent women. After all, they were, quote, normal, according to society. I was the one who was on the fringe of sexual behavior. Once a week, I couldn't wait to get to my CR group to be a sexual clown, a mime, and a sister teacher. I did sexual assertiveness training with them on how to ask a man out on a date and how to get what they wanted sexually. I also demonstrated how to reach down and stimulate a clitoris during intercourse. And of course, I raved about guilt-free masturbation and showed them different pelvic movements and positions I used with my vibrator. They all gasped that night. I took off my shirt and flexed my little biceps while I talked about the importance of developing our bodies in order to be better in bed. Most important, I made them laugh. We laughed together for hours, week after week, month after month. They were horrified, amused, embarrassed, tickled, and finally, grateful. Eventually, I discovered that most of them were having secret orgasms with masturbation when they were alone and faking orgasms when they were with their lovers. Before I left the group, I bought a case of high-powered electric vibrators and passed them out, assuring them that a sexually turned-on woman was a joy to a man, not a threat. Some of the vibrators got hidden in the back of closets, but the courageous women made the vibrator and masturbation an integral part of their sex lives. Female sexual repression wasn't going to disappear overnight just because that's what I wanted to happen. I highlighted that, too, because I have to remind it to myself. Because now I feel like Betty, and I'm like, guys, listen, I'm reading a book, I'm posting online, I found a thing called sex, it's great. Why are we all pretending it's not great? Okay. In 1920, we'd gotten the vote, and now we were working on the ERA, Equal Rights Amendment. In 1973, I kicked off the EOA, Equal Orgasms Amendment, and some of us had our own private sexual revolutions. Then, during the 80s, most of America shut down sexually with fears about contracting AIDS. Meanwhile, government officials refused to make condoms available to students in high school. And while gay men learned to change their sex habits, most heterosexuals used monogamy instead of latex to play it safe. The women's movement took a serious wrong turn in the early 80s, which broke my heart. There were days I believed the rumor that Women Against Pornography was being funded by the CIA. We became divided by all the infighting that resulted from the pornography debates. I knew we'd lost it when feminists started sounding like right-wing politicians and religious leaders who wanted to censor all forms of sexual entertainment. During that time, I got involved with the Feminists Against Censorship Task Force, a group of mostly academic women who were creating documents and articles to let the media know there were feminists other than the anti-sex and anti-porn voices that were being pumped into the marketplace. The two other groups I support are Feminists for Free Expression, FFE, I want to join, and the National Coalition Against Censorship, NCAC. These organizations have many feminist voices of sexual reason and seldom get national press. I want to join them. Okay. Currently, this is the last page, and then I'm going to eat my sandwich and soup and maybe just talk to you a little bit more about what I think. Currently, pornography is being blamed for rape, incest, wife battering, date rape, child abuse, and sexual harassment of women in the workplace. These aberrations stem from sexual repression, not from graphic pictures of sex. I feel that's important to read this whole thing again. Currently, pornography is being blamed for rape, incest, wife battering, date rape, child abuse, and sexual harassment of women in the workplace. These aberrations stem from sexual repression, not from graphic pictures of sex. We have to remember that the crusade to end pornography is really an attack on our First Amendment rights, an effort to control our sexual freedom. We need to speak out against all the religious bigots who demand that the entire population have monogamous marital sex for procreation only. We also need to confront the anti-porn feminists who are intent on preserving their romantic illusions by demanding that their lovers and all the rest of mankind be monogamous, including no more beating off with Playboy or Penthouse. Many feminists have a serious blind spot. We're ready to criticize patriarchy and men's misuse of power in a flash, but we ignore our own abuses of power. We see matriarchal control as gentle and kind, but the role of wife and mother can be just as authoritarian as a Marine drill sergeant. We seldom acknowledge the power that women have over children, and we almost never speak about wives who dominate their husbands. In many homes, the authoritarian mother is a force to be reckoned with. Her rigid standards of sexual morality and her righteous indignation when her rules are broken make her a formidable adversary who is unbending, unyielding, and sometimes even violent. The problems women faced were glaring at me when I first began teaching, and they have remained a challenge with each passing decade. How are we ever going to have consistent orgasmic sex in good relationships with men or with other women? While we claim to want love between equals, the problem remains that no two people are exactly equal. Just as democracy was a work in progress, so was equality. I kept going back to self-love. It had to come first. When everyone had a decent amount of self-esteem and could look at what constitutes good partnerships, open communication, complex agreements, tons of compromise, and delicate negotiations. And even after we mastered all that, the chances were still very good that in order for both people to continue to grow and be happy, many partnerships would need to end. And even though a few marriages might last a lifetime, nothing lasted forever. An interesting ending. What did you guys think? I'm gonna stop recording and eat my grilled cheese. Bye. Thanks for listening to me.